This is Philip Bauer, a volunteer from 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Keith Brownhill. On today's edition of Jaws of Justice Radio, we find out about the programs the Veterans Administration has for homeless veterans and how Catholic Charities is working with a local developer and a group of local veterans to build a full-service campus for homeless veterans. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the show, and the 420 drug war news has been moved to after our goodbyes. Up next is Jeff, Corey, and Sandra.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. This is Jeff Humfeld. And if you have followed the issue of homelessness for very long, you have heard countless mayors, governors, and other officials claim they are going to end homelessness in their city or state, usually to little avail. Recently, the Veterans Administration has committed to ending veteran homelessness by the end of 2015, saying, "No one who has served our country should ever go without a safe, stable place to call home." This is a fight I think we can all get behind, and here today to tell us what that plan is and how we can help and be part of it is Corey Jones, Grant and Per Diem Liaison, and Sandra Robinson, Acting Homeless Coordinator at the KC Veterans Administration. And welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you.
I want to start right off first by commending the Veterans Administration for standing up and saying, hey, we're going to do this. And General Shinseki also, you know, taking this challenge on, because it really is a very difficult challenge for any organization or agency or whatever. And we want to thank them for at least standing up and doing what you know, trying to do what they're saying. And I guess my first question is, why don't we start with, you know, how big a problem this really is for veterans? You know, across the country, I guess, or locally, you know, what are some of the numbers, or do you have numbers for that?
Well, the Kansas City area is, we do a point-in-time survey every year, and that collects data in collaboration with community partners, collects data on the services that are needed, what people feel is being provided in the community, homeless services, and what we need to do. And that's how we actually get our funding for HUD-VASH vouchers. So I can tell you, on the permanent housing side, we started out about 5 years ago with 70 vouchers, and now we're up to 222. We get funded on those vouchers based on the need of the community. So, and locally, it's growing, and that's kind of been across the board nationally as well. Every place kind of surveys and sees what the need is, and then that's how the vouchers are distributed.
All right, and just to let our listeners know, that was Sandra.
Yes.
So when you hear voices, you can put the face or the voice with the title, so to say. Is there a difference, Sandra, between the experience of male veterans and female veterans?
I think there is. I'm a vet, and I can say that traditionally women's services, it's a little bit harder to get integrated in the system. However, I feel like the Kansas City VA is doing a great job in trying to meet women's needs, and both the programs, well, all of the homeless programs that we have are ensuring that we're meeting women's needs as well as male needs. I would say probably it's maybe lack of communication, of not knowing that the services are available for women veterans, but if they come, we definitely do all we can to provide the services that they need for them.
Yes, and I believe there is a new center going to be opening very soon for the women. Off 43rd Street, I think it is, over
the
east.
Honor Annex.
Yeah, the Honor
yeah.
Annex.
Yeah, the Honor Annex.
You know, how does the VA plan to address this problem as a whole? I mean, this you know, declaration we're going to end homelessness among vets by 2015, what's the overall plan here?
Well, I think Sandra touched on it. There's a national impact and then locally. And so Sandra kind of talked a little bit about the point-in-time survey, which is a snapshot on that particular day of all the homeless veterans in the Kansas City metro area. Other initiatives are they do a challenge survey, which providers or surveyed and community partners are. We have a homeless summit that we do. So I think, and Sandra attends lots of community meetings as the acting homeless coordinator. So I think the VA is doing a better job of partnering up with community agencies, because the VA is not going to be able to do this on our own. We're going to have, it's going to be a community effort to make sure that our veterans are no longer homeless. So I think that's a global idea, is to kind of encompass community partners. Us being on this radio show today to talk about people who might not even know that they're eligible for services, a veteran at the VA, and talking to them about how they can get eligible and be in our services.
Right. What are some of those agencies or groups that you are partnering with? You know, are they organizations that we would normally hear about out in the public or others?
Absolutely. Right now, we're working very closely with the Homeless Task Force, and they've been very supportive. They have a lot of community agencies together, along with the Continuums of Care. We attend all of those meetings and work with those partnerships, and basically, we're working towards a more collaborative community effort to house not just the veterans but everyone locally. And so there's lots of people. I could name off a million agencies. There's Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, Restart. Actually, Restart is going to be working with us to kind of revamp our outreach program locally, because outreach is one of the things that the VA traditionally struggles with. We've improved over the last year trying to get out in the community. We go down to Hope Faith, meet people where they're at. But we're looking to do more of a street outreach like the other community agencies so we can really reach the veterans. We're also working on, with our summit, improving relations in the community as far as employers for the veterans and seeing how we can access those services and get vets employed. We're planning a landlord luncheon at the task force. That's going to be December 6th to kind of recognize the landlords that have worked with not only our permit housing, but the landlords out in the community with other programs, to tell them, you know, thank you for supporting this process and seeing how we can build those relationships up so we can get more people invested in providing homes for veterans.
Some of the other agencies, too, that we work with in our transitional housing program and emergency housing, we work with Bennett Hall and Heroes Homegate and Sandra Mission Salvation Army. So we have two sites in Kansas City, Kansas for our homeless veterans, and then we have Salvation Army Harbor House, which is located here in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, that is, you brought up something that I wanted to ask about, because I believe that Sandra's job here, there's also someone at the hospital at Leavenworth that has a similar position. How do we cross state lines here and cooperate and all? What is that, you know, process?
Absolutely. We have conference calls monthly so that everyone in the VISN gets together in every program. That's for HUD-VASH, that's for Grant and Per Diem, for HCHB services, and then there's also a Safe Haven. So we have conference calls monthly that we work together with, and then, you know, we've built these relationships with these individuals. They're doing the same job. So if somebody is in Leavenworth, they want to come to Kansas City, we work very closely with the providers to make sure that happens smoothly.
Okay. Let me see. Corey, you are what's called the Grant and Per Diem Liaison. Now, that's a really strange-sounding title.
Very much so.
Why don't you tell us about this Grant and Per Diem program and what it is?
Grant and Per Diem is a national program. So majority of the VAs in the United States provide transitional housing to our veterans. So that's what it means. The grant means the capital grant for the building itself that the program is wanting to provide homeless services to our veterans. So that would cover the typically the agencies already have a building in mind, or they're already operating out of the building. So the grant would cover, you know, maybe upkeep a little bit of the building. Sometimes if they need vans for transportation, those kinds of things. The per diem is actually the reimbursement the agency gets to provide the transitional services to the veterans. So it's a daily cost. So that's where the grant and per diem comes in. Here in the Kansas City metro area, we have several sites. Community partners who are interested in applying for grants to provide homeless services to our veterans, a NOFA, which is a notification of financial award, goes out annually. And it's on the VA's website, or they can contact me and I'll give my information. Those go out annually, and community partners can apply to be a provider, a homeless provider. Right now we have a female site in Kansas City, Kansas, called Virginia Harding. That's located on 67th and State Avenue. We have 8 female beds there, and that's through the Salvation Army. So it's Salvation Army Harbor Light Village is also in Kansas City, Kansas. They're located on the same campus, but 2 separate buildings. And we have 30 beds there for male veterans. In Kansas City, Missouri, we have several sites. We have Benilt Hall. Benilt Hall is located at 3220 East 23rd Street, and we have 30 beds there for male veterans. And then also through the Salvation Army, it's Harbor House, also may know it as Moses. Located on 5100 East 24th Street, and we have 30 beds there for male veterans. I'm actually the liaison for the Kansas City, Missouri sites, and then my coworker Tanya Foster is a liaison for Harbor Light Village and Virginia Harding, and I'll give you her information. To qualify for grant and per diem, and it's easier for us to say transitional housing because it is such a long word, a veteran has to be eligible for any of our homeless programs, has to be eligible for services at the VA Medical Center. So if a veteran is interested and homeless, we like to get them in housing that day. So if a veteran comes into the hospital that day, needs somewhere to be, we serve them that day. And it depends on availability. If the weather gets colder, sometimes we fill up pretty quickly. And if that happens, we take the veteran's name and information, and as people transition out of our program, we want to contact those veterans because we don't want them out on the street. To be eligible, if a veteran has not engaged in services at the VA yet, they need to have a copy of their DD-214. If they do not, we can help them get a copy of that for services so that we can know that they're eligible for medical services at the VA. Once eligibility is screened, they meet with one of the liaisons and we do an assessment, kind of getting some of their, you know, their housing history, why they're in this situation, how long they've been in this situation. And then depending on their need, if they have a substance abuse history, we refer them to one of our providers that kind of focuses more on sobriety. If not, we refer them to another program here too. So it kind of depends on, we try to individualize it for the veteran. If they're from Missouri, they don't want to go to Kansas, we try to keep them on the Missouri side. All of our providers provide transportation to the VA several times a day because we want to make sure that the veterans are able to get treatment at the VA. So it's really a neat service. I've been in this position for a little over a year and I'm very excited. I think the veterans appreciate it. The providers really do lots of wraparound services. I go to the site several times a week to make sure that they're providing good continual services to our veterans. Veterans are provided, you know, 3 meals a day, nice warm place to be. It's a program, so it's not like a shelter where they have to leave and be gone. They can actually stay there and participate in programming throughout the day. Once they're there, they're eligible for job search assistance immediately through HVSEP, which is Homeless Veteran Supported Employment. That's a program. We use lots of acronyms in the government. So once, if the veteran's saying, you know, part of the reason why they're homeless is because they don't have employment or any benefits, we want to make sure that we're able to help them. So that might be, you know, advocating that they get some type of benefit, whether that's Social Security or a VA benefit. If they're wanting to work, you know, assisting them with getting employment. Also, this is a really good perk, because unless you're 100% service-connected, you don't get dental services through the VA. So once a veteran is there for 60 days in our program, they get free dental services, and they really like that, because that helps them with their self-confidence when they need to go out and look for a job. So I think transitional housing is a really good program. We also have what's called emergency housing. Now, the difference between emergency housing and transitional housing, emergency housing is short-term, whereas grant per diem, a veteran can be in our program for up to 24 months, which is a nice long time for them to be able to get back on their feet. Emergency housing is short-term, very goal-focused. The veteran typically might be waiting on income to come in, might have already chosen an apartment but it's not quite ready, might be transitioning on to the Leavenworth Domiciliary, which is another homeless program that's through the Leavenworth VA. So typically those veterans can stay in emergency housing for a short time. There's no cost to them. What I forgot to say about transitional housing is if a veteran has income, the expectation is that they're expected to pay 30% what's called a participant fee. And it's used as a therapeutic tool to get the veteran back in the mindset of paying rent. So, but if they don't have any income, the expectation is that they don't pay. So those are kind of the differences between emergency housing is short-term, goal-directed. Transitional housing is long-term, still goal-directed, but they can be there much longer.
All right. One of the things that you mentioned were the different facilities that you're working with here in Kansas City. Now, I know I've had contact with Benilde House, and I know that one of their focuses is on the mental health aspects of the PTSD and maybe drug or alcohol problems and stuff. Are these shelters maybe to some extent focused on particular things, some a little bit different than others, or are they all kind of focused on those type of issues?
Let me correct you first, not a shelter.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's why I'm here.
They do. I'm glad you brought that up. Like you said, Benilde Hall is more focused on recovery. So if a veteran identifies that they have some type of substance abuse concern, we want to place them at Benilde Hall because they'll get the support that they need in their recovery. Salvation Army Harbor House is still focused on recovery, but it's less restrictive than Benilde Hall. Benilde has a requirement of group expectations daily that the veteran has to do. Harbor House necessarily doesn't have that expectation that Benilde Hall does. So if a veteran has a substance abuse history but they're not actively using and they don't feel like they need that added support and they want to be in Kansas, Missouri, then we would refer them to Harbor House. Harbor Light Village in Kansas City, Kansas has two separate grants. One of the grants focuses more on veterans who have sobriety kind of concerns, and then one grant focuses more on veterans that might have some medical issues but not necessarily sobriety issues, so then that would be where they would be placed. And then Virginia Harding is our female transitional housing program. It doesn't matter if a female veteran has substance abuse issues or not. That's the only female program that we have, so we typically place them there.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners that this is Jaws of Justice Radio on KKFI, and my name is Jeff Humfeld, and today our guests are Corey Jones and Sandra Robinson from the Kansas City VA, and we're talking about homelessness among veterans and what's out there to help the homeless veteran. Sandra, why don't you tell us a little bit more about some of the day-to-day programs that you're involved in and some of the groups that you're working with.
Absolutely. The other side of the homeless program consists of what's called HUD-FASH, and that's Housing and Urban Development, VA-supported housing. So basically that is our permanent housing. VA is in partnership with HUD, and what we do is provide Section 8 vouchers for homeless veterans that are chronically homeless. They have mental health and substance abuse issues, and basically instead of just receiving a Section 8 voucher and saying, here you go, try to figure this out on your own, the partnership is the VA provides case management services to these veterans to assist them with sustaining the housing once we locate it. So to be eligible for that program, veterans need to meet the income guidelines, and that's, you know, the same for Section 8. It's like $24,000 for a single, and it goes up, you know, depending on how many family members you have. The only other requirement is that you're not a sex offender, because that's a HUD rule. That's not a VA rule. So basically, that program right now, it started out at it's nationally been around for a long time. It's been at the Kansas City VA for the past 5 years. We started out with 70 vouchers. We're now up to 222 vouchers. And basically, the case managers work hand-in-hand with the veterans. When they come in and they're homeless and they've been chronically homeless and they have substance abuse, mental health issues, there's a piece that's lost for them. And so we really work with them on training them about the skills that they're going to need. We help them locate apartments in the community. We meet with landlords. We complete home visits with them, check in with them, make sure that they're, you know, getting everything that they need from the landlord. So it is about community partnership and building relationships with these landlords, too, that are willing to take a chance with people that have been on the street and maybe, you know, in some rougher times. So that's the HUD-VASH program. I'm also going to be doing what's called the Safe Haven Liaison position. And, again, this is another contract grant. It's been awarded to Benil Hall. It was posted quite some time ago, and people were eligible to apply for it, just like the grant and per diem positions. And so, basically, this is going to be a 25-bed low-demand facility. And what that means, part of the struggle with homelessness is people have a multitude of issues that they're trying to address, and they may struggle in transitional housing. They may struggle with even permanent housing. Sometimes it just doesn't work out because of these other issues that need to be addressed. So the idea of the Safe Haven is to provide 25 beds. Beds are going to be eligible for males and females, and to provide a low-demand model to kind of meet the veteran where they're at. Treatment options are going to be optional for people. We're going to just really try to use a strengths perspective and work with the veteran and make sure that they know the services are available, offer them lots of support, offer them guidance on how to get back on their feet, and then hopefully they can transition into, you know, transitional housing and maybe even an emergency bed or permanent supportive housing. That's going to be the main goal.
Okay. If someone is in one of the facilities like Benil House or one of the Safe Haven houses, they have transportation to go to the VA. If in the case of the Section 8 vouchers, they're in an individual home somewhere around town. Are there ways for them to access transportation to the VA when they need to? Or
absolutely. Each person that receives a voucher is also assigned a case manager, and that person follows them. You know, the goal of that is to really teach them how to utilize community resources like the KC Metro, different things like that. In the beginning, the case manager might actually just transport the vet. They might go out, you know, get him in the car, take him out, look at several apartments. But the goal is to help these people access community resources for transportation. If they don't have that and they don't have the skill set to utilize that in the beginning, that's when the VA steps in and provides it for them.
Okay, we've talked about a lot of different partners, so to say, today. One of the things I'm going to ask you is, you know, if you can get me a list of some of those places and the contact information for them, for a veteran that's out there, I'm quite willing to put that on our Facebook page and our page on the KKFI website so folks can access that and they know, all right, here's one place I can go and find all this information together. So if we can do that, that would be great.
I'm happy to provide you that. For veterans to be in emergency housing or rent and per diem housing, they first have to be assessed by a social worker at the VA. So they can't just go to the program off the street and say, hey, I'm a homeless vet. They have to be triaged through the VA first, and then we refer them to the program. But because we have to screen and make sure that they're
exactly
appropriate, and then the program has to agree to provide the services to the veterans. But I'm happy to give you that information of our site locations and stuff.
Okay, good deal. You know, how would somebody out there, and I've run across in the work that I've been doing here at the radio station for a few years, I've run across a lot of different agencies. How would they contact the VA and find out more about the per diem program and the grant program?
There's several ways that they can contact. We do have a homeless veteran hotline, and we have that information here today. And then, you know, whoever the homeless supervisor is, that person gets lots of calls just for questions. We're out in the community, so the community partners, a lot of them are aware how to refer back and forth. But I'd be more than happy to provide my information and the contact information for the staff that work in the homeless program so that we can be contacted if there's questions.
I think Sandra briefly talked about the hotline. It's a crisis hotline for veterans that are at risk of becoming homeless or are currently homeless. It's manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at a call center. So what the veteran does is they call into this 1-877 number. They tell the operator what their concern or their problem is, and then that's ported through the local VAs. So I am one of the point of contacts for that. So we get those calls daily. We triage them, and then typically that's how our veterans engage in our services, majority of them. So we'll call them back. We keep trying to make contact with them. Once we make contact, we tell them how to come in and engage in our homeless services. So that's a big piece of it. A lot of word of mouth gets around, too. And we do have a orientation group every Monday and Thursday morning at the VA at 8:30 in the morning in the mental health clinic. Homeless veterans can present to the clinic at 8:30. We'll do an orientation with them, and then they'll meet individually with one of us liaisons or social workers, and then that's how they're triaged as well for programming.
Okay, I do want to give that number for our listeners. That's 877-4-AID-VET or 877-424-3838. That's 877-424-3838. And it is important for you to understand that even if you know where one of these facilities are, you have to go to the VA and sign up first. It's not that hard a process. I've been through it. You know, you might need to know a little bit about some of your relatives, but that's about it. you know, we have just a few minutes left, so I want to ask, are there some other parts of this puzzle that we haven't talked about that we really need to say something about?
Yes, I was going to mention that we also have a Veteran Justice Outreach Service. Kelly Winship is in charge of that, and basically it helps us to outreach. There's a veterans court in place. So if veterans get charges in Jackson County, they can be referred to the veterans court services and go through a veterans court rather than a typical, you know, court. So it looks at some of their issues and helps them get involved with treatment rather than just saying, you know, you're going to go to jail and that's the end of the story. So we're working very closely with them, working with courts and attorneys, law enforcement, and local jails. Kelly Winship is, like I said, the one that does that, and she is also doing a law enforcement training this week at the VA for the local police department. And we've also, she's worked very hard with them to do some camp outreach to the local veterans. So that's another exciting program that we have at the VA. And then more recently, we added what are called HCHV workers, and they basically are there to fill the gaps in services. The VA is aware that some people may not be eligible for the services that we talked about either, but there's still a need. They may need to locate resources so that they can get back on their feet in more of a community integration. So we just added those workers, and they're going to be probably up and running by the end of the month.
Okay, we are out of time, but I would like you both to give phone number or whatever for how you can be contacted.
Well, the main number at the VA is 816-861-4700, and my extension is 55412.
And I'm Corey Jones. I'm the one responsible for transitional housing or emergency housing, and my extension is the main number, 816-861-4700, extension 56604.
Well, we want to thank both our guests today, Corey and Sandra, for coming in. And coming up next is our calendar of events, and then host Lee Moore finds out more about the St. Michael's Veterans Campus.
Now the calendar for November 18th. Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will hold vigils across the state tomorrow to protest the execution of Joseph Franklin, scheduled for November 20th. In Kansas City, the vigil will be Tuesday, November 19th. At the J.C. Nichols Fountain at 47th and Main, Kansas City, Missouri, in the plaza from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. The execution of Allen Nicholson, originally scheduled in October, but has been halted because of the concerns about the use of the drug propofol for lethal injections, has been rescheduled for December 11th. Vigils will be held December 10th to protest his execution. For information, call Kathleen, 816-206-8692. You are invited to attend a groundbreaking ceremony for the East Patrol Division Station and Crime Lab campus, 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 19th at 26th and Prospect, Kansas City, Missouri. City and KC Police Department officials will join community leaders in turning the first shovels of dirt as the construction phase of the project begins. For more information about the East Patrol Division Station Crime Lab campus, visit the project website at www.saferkc.com/east. Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington is sponsoring a local celebrity basketball game Wednesday, November 20th at Purcell Academy, 4747 Flora, Kansas City, Missouri. Festivities start at 6 p.m. and the game starts at 7 p.m. Admissions will be donations of at least 4 canned goods, turkeys, coats, gloves, slightly used clothing, or children's toys. Donated items will be used for the community Thanksgiving dinner and giveaway Wednesday, November 27th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Brush Creek Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, call 816-651-0044 or email voicesofthepeople.votp@gmail.com. My name is Keith Brownlee, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Veterans in emotional crisis and their loved ones can call the free and confidential Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or send a text message to 838255 to connect with a caring, qualified VA responder who can deal with any immediate crisis. Veterans and people who are concerned about a veteran can also go to www.veteranscrisisline.net to access the confidential, anonymous online chat to connect with a responder and get support.
Good morning, KKFI listeners. My name is Lee Moore, and I'm a programmer for KKFI's 90.1 Jaws of Justice radio show. Today, I'm sitting here in the KKFI studio with Lisa Tulp, Communications Coordinator for the Catholic Charities Foundation. Today, we'll be talking about the new St. Michael's Homeless Veterans Center that'll be opening up officially very soon. Lisa, will you tell our listeners who you are and currently what you're involved in?
Well, Lee, thank you for having us today. I am the Communications Coordinator for Catholic Charities of Kansas City St. Joseph, and we are one of the area's largest social service providers here in the Kansas City metro area and into St. Joseph for the diocese. And currently, I'm working on a host of projects, but St. Michael's is one of the first things that I jumped into when I started this position. We are trying to spread the word to everybody in the community about our commitment to these heroes and helping support them when they come home to make a successful transition back into civilian life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in your estimate, how many homeless and at-risk veterans are there in Kansas City, Missouri, and throughout the country?
Well, this is a difficult number to pinpoint because of the nature of homelessness, transitional. We talk about people who, there's a term couch surfing, people who maybe are sleeping in a bed one night but the next night don't have one. So when we talk about numbers, these are the best ones that we can come up with, that there are about 63,000 homeless veterans in the United States, another 1.4 million that are at risk due to unstable living arrangements, and here in the Kansas City area, roughly 1,800.
Now, that's a big disparity. So, again, will you explain that disparity?
Between the national numbers and Kansas City?
Yes.
Well, every community, I think, has a veteran population, a homeless veteran population, and I know that once or twice a year they do a homeless survey here in the Kansas City area. So these are the numbers that we're able to come up with, people that are either living in shelters, living with relatives but in an unstable situation, or literally living out on the streets.
Now, one of the things that many of us have heard in the news, we've been told that our president and the Veterans Administration would like to end homelessness on the part of veterans by the end of the year 2015. Now, that's an extremely optimistic initiative. Do you believe it's attainable, and what are some of the methods that you guys are planning to pursue to meet that or reach that goal?
Lee, I have to believe it's attainable because we're committed at Catholic Charities of Kansas City St. Joseph to doing this, and there are so many other partners and agencies here in our community and around the country that are committed to doing it. To say it's not attainable is to sort of admit defeat, and we are not willing to do that on the part of these men and women. What we are doing through the St. Michael's Veterans Center is what we hope will be a national model. We hope that we will afford for these men and women safe, permanent, affordable housing, meaning this is not transitional. This is not a place that you can come until you get it together and then you are back out where you started. We're going to take these people in for as long as they need the assistance. So safe, permanent, and affordable housing, coupled, and this is the key, with the supportive services that these veterans need. So we're coming to them where they are, not just geographically, but where they are in their transition. If that means that they are in need of benefits, if they are in need of therapies, mental health counseling, job training, soft skills, all those kinds of things, we hope ultimately to offer those all on this one campus. Transportation for these veterans who are homeless or at risk is a major issue. To get from where they are to the VA or to an appointment with a case manager or to health services, if you can't get there, you can't get the help you need. If they're already right there in your neighborhood and you're already safe and you've got that first piece of the puzzle in place, which is the housing piece, you know, how many of us can rest easy if we don't have a place to call home?
Sure.
So when we give that to these men and women, they've got the first piece, the biggest piece. Now, let's get those other services in place for you. And guess what? They're right here.
Sure.
They're, in some cases, in the same building that you're in. And that's what we hope to do and provide as a model nationally. And then, yeah, maybe we can solve that problem by 2015.
Now, with collaboration is one of the most used terms here, terms in any initiative like this. I'm sure that you're going to have to collaborate with many organizations. Who are some of the partners that you and are planning to work with to meet those goals?
Well, first off, part of this is made possible by a grant of $665,000 that comes from the Department of Veterans Affairs, which speaks very highly of our proposal. We are also partner with the city. The Economic Development Council took about, I think, 12 different proposals for the site where St. Michael's is, and this is the one that they granted. So we're very grateful to the city for giving us this opportunity to turn this blighted land into something that can be really a beacon of hope for everybody. U.S. Bank is helping to provide the financing. Yarko Construction is our building partner. There are a myriad of partners. Art Fillmore on our board is with Operation Stand Down, and he is a liaison with the veteran community for us and can really help communicate those needs. So this is a collaborative effort. This is unusual to see nonprofits and corporations and banks and the government all come together because we have this one common goal.
Sure, sure. Now, what are some of the specific things that can be done to reach that goal of zero homelessness by the end of 2015?
I think the supportive services component is the key. Providing somebody with housing is, of course, the first basic need, and some of those emergency assistance elements, which would be food, utilities, clothing, transportation, those are great things to do. But if you don't then give them the help they need to, you know, empower them to take control of their own lives and their destinies, then you're kind of just putting a Band-Aid over the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be more than the Band-Aid. We want to be part of the healing process. Those supportive services, as you know, can be anything from substance abuse counseling, mental health counseling, physical therapy. A lot of folks that are coming back, they need a job. You know, when you have your own income stream, obviously that provides you with independence that you would never have. So we want to do some job training, have a computer lab on site to brush up on some of those skills. A lot of them might want to have continuing education. We want to provide an outlet for that. So all of those things that you and I and so many of our neighbors have access to, we need to give that access to our veterans, the men and women that served our country.
Sure. With what illnesses are some of the homeless veterans dealing?
Well, obviously we know that people come back with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and that can be a disabling condition, really, unless you get the help and services that you need, and that's part of what St. Michael's will do. Other conditions, obviously, there are physical ailments. There's physical therapy that has to be done. We come back with various injuries that need to be treated, and the mental health component is very important as well. That goes along with PTSD, but aren't necessarily the same thing. There's also some issue with substance abuse, and you will find that among a veteran population just as much as you'll find it among, I think, the general population. But because these folks come at it with maybe a couple of other things working against them, they need a little bit of extra help to get the services they need.
Will there be on-site mental and medical assistance?
Yes. The project begins in phases. So we are currently building phase one. And phase one, it's kind of an elastic process, if you will, Lee. We will see how phase one works, and then we may adapt phases two and three, say, oh, you know what, we missed out on this particular service. This is something they really need. So we are hoping that the case management, we know the case management will be the first included in the first phase, which means that a veteran who qualifies for housing and has moved into St. Michael's will have a case manager that will say, okay, here's where you're at. And they are kind of the conduit for connecting them to all the other services. So that may be connecting them to mental health counseling. That may be connecting them to the benefits to which they are entitled. We're kind of letting that process develop so we can assess the needs based on the people that come into St. Michael's. And I think that's a really great approach because we can't know everything they need. We can't know what services are going to be the most vital until we really start operating and really get in touch with the folks that we are trying to lift up and serve.
Sure. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Lee Moore. I'm here with Lisa Tulp, the communications coordinator for Catholic Charities Foundation. You're listening to the Jaws of Justice radio program right here on 90.1 KKFI Community Radio. We'll switch gears a little bit and discuss the stand down event. Just recently, as we do annually, have in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, the stand down event. Lisa knows a bit about stand down, and I wanted to ask you to comment a bit, Lisa Tulp, about the stand down event.
Operation Stand Down, I think, was the Friday before Veterans Day, so that would have made it around November 8th. Staff at Catholic Charities are a supportive service for veteran families, staff who are very, very committed to ending the homeless problem among veterans. They take part in that event every year. Also, Art Fillmore, who is a board member of the St. Michael's Veterans Center, is one of the founders of the local Operation Stand Down event here. Very committed. As a veteran himself, a decorated veteran who came back and had to deal with some of these readjustment issues, he noticed a great need among his brothers and sisters in arms, if you will, for these services. This is a one-day event. They come through. They receive that emergency assistance, the clothing. This year there was a great need for boots. You know, this is the winter
pre-winter stand down, so there was a lot of need for that. They serve hundreds of veterans with some job advice, job training. They take some resume building, things like that. So we're really, really proud to have Art Fillmore on our board because he is, I think, probably one of the best-known veterans advocates in our community, if not the best-known. And his program, Stand Down, has just been a great help and a great success for these veterans. Now, Art did say at our groundbreaking, I like this quote because it really speaks to what we're all about. Art said, "It's my hope that St. Michael's will become a beacon in the darkness of the life experience of homeless veterans, an inspiration to other cities throughout our country as to how we can put an end to the staggering issue of rampant homelessness among those who have served our country." Hmm. So I think Art's words really speak to that goal of ending homelessness by 2015 and how Catholic Charities of Kansas City, St. Joseph, and our partners really want to be on the leading edge of that effort.
Sure. Now, Catholic Charity serves about 160 veterans per year with its programs. I believe there is some of your literature that mentions that you guys have about 50 programs. What are some of the programs that Catholic Charities does have to assist veterans?
Well, our SSVF program, again, Supportive Services for Veteran Families, addresses the issues of homeless veterans a few ways with outreach, going out and finding the folks that need the assistance and bringing them in, doing an intake, and getting them hooked up with case management. The biggest population there is rapid rehousing. Let's get that piece of the puzzle in place first. Let's get them housing first. That is our model. We have three or four case managers that work in housing, and we have a wonderful staff member that works in economic security and sustainability. Big piece here. This is jobs, benefits, pensions, job training, getting them on a trade track. We work with legal aid. They have a position now that works solely with Catholic Charities in case veterans returning have any legal issues. They do assessments there. In our last grant period, Lee, we served, and these numbers are still being crunched a little and be finalized, but I think we served 142 households. We had a 75% total success rate, which, you know, that means 75%, well, it sounds like you could do better. Well, we like this number because it shows that we are working with the most vulnerable veteran populations, the ones that maybe have the most difficulty staying housed, the ones that have the most difficulty getting their benefits and finding a place where they fit in. So actually, to us, that number is a source of pride. The other thing is that in that last grant term, we found that we were getting more and more referrals from veterans who had already completed our program, meaning they are really finding a successful home at Catholic Charities enough so that they are then referring their other brothers and sisters who may be homeless or at risk to come to us for all of these
Excellent.
Different services.
Sure. Now, are the 160 or so that you guys serve through your program, your current programs, are those folk that will be served by the 100, I'm sorry, are those folk that will be living at the new centers in addition to the ones that will be served in your current programs?
I'm not exactly sure how the population will be determined for St. Michael's. I know that in the first phase we'll have 58 apartments.
Mm-hmm.
We're not calling them beds. We're not calling them units. These are really great apartments. These are a place where you and I would be proud to live.
Excellent.
Really beautiful housing, which I think, you know, lends to a sense of pride and ownership and that kind of thing. So we'll have these 58. There may be some crossover, but a lot of the folks that we're serving through the SSVF program, those cases will be closed successfully by the time the doors at St. Michael's opens, is my assumption. And as we go through the phases, we'll go up to 180 people in these apartment units. So if you talk about 1,800 people on the 1,800 veterans approximately on the streets of Kansas City at night, that's 10%.
Wow.
We're starting at we're looking at housing permanently and giving services to 10%. So that's a pretty great number when you look at the end goal of ending homelessness.
Now, how long can a person vet stay in the new center?
Well, this is permanent housing, so
okay.
We're not putting an end date on it. They're not bound and, you know, to stay there for the rest of their lives. Obviously, once they are empowered and self-determined and they say, hey, you know what, I want to go out and get a place of my own. I don't need to be at the campus anymore because I've utilized these services and become successful on my own. That'll open up a spot for somebody else coming in.
Mm-hmm. Will they, do you have specific outcomes that you're expecting to meet?
We will, obviously. There will be outcomes determined by the grant from the Department of Veterans Affairs. There will be outcomes determined by our social workers and our case managers. I don't know exactly what those will be, but there will be success levels that will be met.
Okay.
And we will make assessments on what services need to be included based on those outcomes.
And is there security, and if so, is there armed security? Are there security cameras and all that?
There will be security. The campus is located on 24 acres of land for just off Emmanuel Cleaver 2 Boulevard in the Vineyard and Seven Oaks neighborhood area. And it was a pretty – it used to be public housing, kind of some rather infamous public housing because it was run down and it was raised in the 90s, and then we had just this blighted lot. The neighborhoods are very welcoming of St. Michael's because it is kind of bragging rights. Look at this mm-hmm. great project that we have right here in our own backyards. But it will be secure. By the nature of having people come in that are at risk and needing services, we want to keep them safe. We want to keep the neighborhood safe, so there will be security. The question of whether it's armed security, Lee, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. It's certainly something I'll check on. There will be, I'm sure, security cameras. There will be gated access. But it's also a place that the neighborhood folks can come. There's going to be this beautiful honor garden at some point that honors all the branches of our military and walking trails. And we want the people that welcomed us into the neighborhood to be welcome there and to come see some of that great stuff that's going on.
Excellent. Well, for our last 30 minutes or 30 seconds, please give me some contact information, Lisa Tulp. What I'd like you to do is give our listeners information on how they can reach you or the veterans program over at Catholic Charities, and also possibly contact the new vet center.
Well, right now, all that contact would be made through Catholic Charities of Kansas City St. Joseph. You can get to us online at www.catholiccharities-kcsj.org. That's a mouthful on the radio, I know. You can also contact me directly, and I can get you in touch with people from our supportive services programs. And my number is 816-659-8226. And you can email us at Catholic Charities as well, and we will get you in touch with the right person. Again, we won't be actually taking folks into the program until, we're looking at a spring 2014 opening for Phase 1. So that process is ongoing, but we certainly are willing to talk to anybody about their needs right now and find the program that fits them immediately and going forward.
Thanks so much.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know. Maybe I'm supposed to cry. If nobody ever knows the way I feel, that's alright. That's okay, 'cause I'm gonna
make my world
a better
place.
Gonna keep that smile on my face. Yeah, I'm gonna teach.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. To find the link to audio of today's show, our calendar of events, and more, check out Jaws of Justice Radio on Facebook. To contact us, send an email to jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And to find out about future shows, check us out on KKFI's website, kkfi.org. My name is Jeff Humfeld. We thank our engineers, Joe Henderson and Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Friday. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then, round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical. Today's outro theme music is Better Man from the Playing for Change Songs Around the World CD.
I'm gonna get back up. It'll be alright. It'll be okay. Well, I'm gonna make my world a better place. Gonna keep that smile on my face. Gonna teach myself how to understand. Gonna make myself a better man.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following comes to us courtesy of KOB-TV.
We reported Monday on a lawsuit claiming a driver was subjected to a series of probes and even a colonoscopy after a traffic stop in Deming. The next day, we brought you another case of a man who says something similar happened to him.
No drugs were found in either incident.
It may be hard to believe that this could happen to yet another New Mexican.
But tonight, Four on Your Side investigator Chris Ramirez is back with the story of a woman who says she was violated by federal agents and doctors.
Another claim of law enforcement violating the most intimate parts of a woman's body. Laura Shower Ives is representing a lifelong New Mexico woman who says she was trying to cross the border from Juarez, Mexico into El Paso.
A dog alerted to her, or at least they claim a dog alerted to her. At that point, Border Patrol agents strip searched her at the facility. They asked her to undress, to spread her genitalia, and to cough. They also pressed their fingers into her vagina looking for drugs.
She considers herself to be a victim of sexual assault and doesn't want it to be known yet. However, we do know she's a lifelong New Mexican. She's a woman in her 50s. The woman claims once they didn't discover anything at the port of entry, they took her to University Medical Center of El Paso.
Well, first, staff and Border Patrol observed her bowel movement, and no drugs were found at that point. They then took an x-ray. The x-ray did not reveal any contraband. They then did a cavity search, and they probed her vagina, and they probed her anus. They describe it in the medical records as bimanual, two-handed. They didn't find anything doing that. Finally, they did a CAT scan. Again, they found nothing.
Unlike the incidents in southern New Mexico, the ACLU claims the federal agents never secured a search warrant before probing and touching this woman. And the doctors at this hospital are accused of performing procedures without the patient okaying it.
Her medical records indicate that she refused consent.
Now, I talked to the spokesperson for the Border Patrol, and here's his take on all of this. He questions whether it really was the Border Patrol involved in this, because the Border Patrol doesn't work at the port of entry. That job is left up to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. He also tells us that he can't verify any of this because he has not seen any reports on this incident.
incidents like this happen dozens of times every day on the U.S. border, but most folks aren't brave enough or rich enough to report it. All in all, it reminds me of intergalactic aliens probing anuses and vaginas and orifices. And for what? Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.